So welcome this evening to this presentation as we talk about lessons in weight loss. So as you may have known, I've lost some weight. So I'll talk about that a little bit. The main thing I wanted to say, though, is that the point here is not to present. I don't claim to be some expert in how to do this. I'll tell you what happened with me. I'll tell you what I learned along the way. But I know everyone kind of has their own journey. So there's no judgment implied here. There's no lecturing. It's not so. Everyone kind of does their thing. If this is helpful to you, I'm happy to share some of those insights. Some of it has to do with some of the mechanics of weight loss, which are kind of. I mean, some of this is not going to be a surprise, I'm sure, to anyone. But there were also other things along the way, things I did not expect, and that's the part that, to be honest, I think is probably more interesting than anything. It's just the unexpected benefits and things that came along the way. So we'll go ahead and start. And begin. So the first thing is finding motivation. So what is the story behind that? So what happened is, so I got to the end of last year. So it was the end of 2019. And it was right around that time that I hit 233 pounds, and which was the highest weight that I had pretty much been at. And the other thing is that I had also, I knew that my blood pressure was high. So it was kind of in the pre-hypertension range, and so it was a little cause for concern. And so I decided at that point, okay, well, I need to make a change, or I need to face a fact. I need to either decide that I'm going to live with medication for the rest of my life to manage that, or I would do something different. And it was at that point that was my motivation to start. And I'll say something about evolving motivation, because sometimes things, what gets you started isn't necessarily what keeps you going as time goes on. But so the big thing was just knowing that there was a need for change. And one of the things about this change is, I think it's more than just understanding, because to be honest, I understood in my mind, so there was an intellectual understanding that this is something I really should do something about. But does it penetrate beyond that? And at least in my experience, just knowing that you should be doing something, something that you're aware of in your mind, is not always enough motivation. And so it was something that I think had to be more than just an awareness. Because we know, in my experience, that there are lots of things we really should be doing. Oh yeah, we should be doing this and we should be doing that. But then why don't we? Well, because we don't feel like it, okay? That's just the reality of where we are. So we need more than that, and so there has to be almost a kind of a passion behind that. And so it was kind of more of an emotional facing. It says like, okay, well, it's like standing at a point where you realize you have a fork in the road, and what is it Yogi Berra said? When you come to a fork in the road, take it. So pretty sure he said that. No, but you have to decide which path you want to take. And I'm like, and so it's a moment of decision. You have to decide, what am I going to do? Another thing is asking for help. And this is something that I had not done before, is that, so a lot of times we figure, oh, I'll fix it myself. And to be honest, for years, it's not that I just woke up and was aware that I should lose weight. I mean, I've known for a while, and there's, and obviously, I mean, you get to a point, and then it says, okay, now I'm really going to do something about this. But I knew for a while, and it had been trying my own things and being careful and trying to do this and that, but it hadn't gone very far. And so I am actually very grateful to Mario Tomic for some insights and guidance through all of this. And so that was, reaching out for help was actually a really important part of success for me, is that doing it by myself, I didn't know what I needed to know in order to be successful. So getting some extra help is not a bad thing, and I think it's good not to be afraid to ask for help when we need it. But then in addition to that, the idea of an evolving need, because there was a point, so I mentioned that it first started off with just the idea of I need to do something about weight. And eventually, so one of the first things that I did is I said, well, the weight was contributing to blood pressure, but so also is alcohol consumption, side effect of alcohol. So I started just by taking alcohol out of my diet, and that began the process of losing weight. And then as time went on, the blood pressure came down. So that motivation ceased to be a factor. In other words, I solved that particular problem. And if that's all I was concerned about, then that would have been the end of the motivation, because the factor was solved, the problem was solved. So, and actually I'm below the normal level right now, which I think is good. If it's too far below, that's bad. Okay, but I think, no, this is good. So the idea that then this opened up a new thing for me as I started to make some progress. I said, well, you know, actually this could be a whole different way of living. And so that became a new reason why. And as you go through that journey, it always seems to me that there are setbacks you encounter along the way. So you always need to have some sort of motivation. And the motivation has got to be stronger than the force of inertia. In other words, there's something that tells us you're perfectly comfortable where you are. And why do you want to make yourself uncomfortable by doing something that's really hard? Well, you have to have a reason why, and finding that new and stronger reason why. And so for me, it was more about opening the door to realize I could live a different kind of life. I could be more disciplined. I could actually, in fact, be quite a bit happier. And it was that motivation. It was a change. It wasn't the reason I started, but it was something that kind of evolved over time. So, and then after that comes the necessary aspect of consistency. So it has to be something that you just keep at doing. And so that's something from January and then on. So here we are in October. So really for 9 months, 10 months, just the consistent effort of doing that. Those are really critical things about that motivation. You know, it's hard to be consistent about something that's difficult, and that's the reason for motivation. Motivation is so important in the midst of this. But then going on for this is the part you're not going to be surprised by, a thing that you see here. What are the basics? Basics are simple. How much are you taking in? How much are you then burning up and putting out? So taking in, you have carbs, you have fats, you have protein. What I did was not some magical thing. And by the way, this presentation, I actually already have it up online, so and I'll explain how to get it. So if there's anything that you see here, know that as soon as you leave tonight, the material's already available. So if that's a help to you, it'll be on my website, so at jgray.org, so you can find that. So carbs, fats, and proteins. What I did was not some magic thing where carbs are bad, or you eat like all fat and then you do something and then you drink pineapple juice and prune juice. No. It was just, no. There's nothing magic about it. There was no, like, secret sauce there that if you do this, then it'll work. And then calories out, exercise, and just regular activity. So there's no way around that. But in addition to that, the other thing that I had learned along the way is that making sure that you have time for recovery is at least as important. Getting good sleep makes a huge amount of difference. I mean, I think we all sort of know this, but it was really driven home to me. Getting a good night's sleep manages your appetite. Do you know how hungry you are when you don't sleep well? Do you know how bad you eat when you don't sleep well? I think it's a huge factor. Plus, the idea of managing stress. I think when I came in here to the parish, I'm not sure I was aware of some of the stresses that I was going to face, and I think those stresses built up at a certain point. And so managing a certain amount of stress, I think sometimes that comes with putting on pounds, because that's a way to manage stress. Well, if we can find productive ways to keep stress under control, it can help us control our appetite, be more active, and actually maintain weight better, at least in my experience. But then also the idea of the mindset that we have. Our mental approach to a thing is so important, more important, I mean, than I would have anticipated at first. So you'd say, oh, well, it's just about making, you know, dedicating yourself to something you want to accomplish. Dedication is a nice thing, but we need something that abides, and that really means oftentimes changing our way of thinking. And I'll say a little bit more about that as we get toward the end of the presentation tonight. So these are really the basics, in my experience, of managing weight loss. So the starting point, so I already told, this is me making pasta for the kids. So we're doing a cooking class in here. We're just right next door, just right here. So we were making carbonara for the kids. And so where was I? So I was at 233. That was where we started. That's not where we are now. Where are we now? You have to wait to find out. Okay, that's okay. So then now calculating the intake, these are just some basics, and I just throw this out. None of this is magic. A lot of this is stuff that I think anyone who with experience in diet and nutrition can tell you about. The question then is, you know, how much do you burn typically? You can use a calculator if you would like to get an estimate of what your total daily energy expenditure is. So oftentimes it'll be based on your age. your sex, your weight, your height, some basic statistics, but also the degree of activity in your life. If you're a very sedentary person, it will be much less. If you're a very active person, it will be much more. And then the idea is, okay, well, if you eat less than you're burning, you're going to lose weight. If you eat more than you burn up, you're going to gain weight. So then comes the importance of tracking calories. Some of you may be aware of MyFitnessPal, which is a fantastic app available for your mobile phones, also a website. I find it to be very helpful. So it's really an excellent way to log the things that you eat, because it's only if we actually take the time, in my experience, to do this tracking that we can understand what exactly are we eating and how much. Because we might have an idea in our mind, oh, I'm eating healthy, I'm not eating that much, until you stop and then you realize just how many calories are in this or in that. Don't get me started about Donut Sunday. Oh, let me tell you, that's all things in moderation, but be careful, because there's a lot of calories there. The idea of tracking weight, this gives you a sense of how you're going. My suggestion, part of what I had learned, use weekly averages, because the problem is weight fluctuates so much. If you even it out by averaging things out by the week, you can kind of see trends. If you see the trend line going up, then you are consuming more than you're burning. If you see the trend line going down, then you are consuming less than you're burning up. And that's just straightforward. So there is some math behind that, which we'll talk about. Yeah, question.
Every day, then?
Yeah. So tracking calories. That was every day. So everything that I ate for every day, basically from January 1st on, but I mean for most of this time, I've been tracking every day everything that I've ate, and then tracking weight. So just recording that every day. So consistent morning weight. Usually your best time to weigh yourself is when you get up in the morning. After you kind of do your just first things, before you've taken anything in, before you've eaten or drank anything, that's the best time to weigh, because it'll be the most consistent. If the rest of the day, your weight's going to fluctuate, you know, after you've had a meal, obviously it's going to be more. If you've had something to drink, it's going to be more. Our weight is going up and down always throughout the day. So morning weights are usually the most consistent. The math behind this is straightforward. It's a classic formula. 3,500 calories corresponds to 1 pound of body fat, or 1 pound of body weight. So if you eat 3,500 calories less than you burn, that will translate to 1 pound. If you do that over a week, that would be, for example, eating 500 fewer calories than you burn up each day. And if you do that for 7 days, the 7 times 500 is 3,500. So if you set a target that's 500 calories under your normal expenditure, what your maintenance is, you lose about 1 pound a week. If you want to gain, does anyone here want to gain? No? Okay, nobody wants to gain. So I won't tell you how to eat 500 more to gain. But you can if you want. So the math is pretty straightforward. So just the idea of a target weight loss. So again, here's just some basic information. This is kind of the model that I followed. So the idea of picking a target, be moderate. Don't lose too fast. But to keep a very steady pace, the idea is to set a target that would be somewhere between 0.3% and 0.7% of your body weight per week. Certainly no more than 1% of your body weight per week. I do a chart here. If you're looking at, let's say that a person weighs 200 pounds, just to keep the math easy. So you might want to plan for a minimum or a maximum between 0.3% and 0.7%, which would be the idea of targeting either 0.6 tenths of a pound. Or 1.4 pounds per week. And if you're going to lose that much per week, then that's the idea of cutting on a weekly basis 2,100 calories for the 0.6 of a pound, 4,900 calories. Well, that sounds like a lot, doesn't it? Okay, if you're losing 1.4 pounds. And what does that come down to per day? The idea of, are you going to try to undereat by 300 calories or even 700 calories? Somewhere in that range. If you consume less than you're burning up, if you're somewhere in that range, that's about the target weight loss that you'll experience. The idea of being slow and steady and consistent, I think, is helpful. Sometimes you've heard of crash dieting. Oh, I don't think that's a good idea. A person can really do very strict things and lose a lot of weight very suddenly, but what happens right after that? What occurs? They put it back on again, don't they? Yeah. So slow and steady, I think, keeps it going consistent. Just be consistent, be smooth. With that, if a person is heavier, if their body fat percentage is higher, you can go for the higher cut. It's reasonable to try to lose more if the body fat is higher. When it gets lower, it's important, I think, to kind of smooth that out and be a little bit more gradual. So that's some of the, at least the direction that I've gotten and that I've tried to follow on this way. So the balanced diet contains protein, carbohydrates, and fats. Here's some more math. This is all stuff that you could look up. The amount of calories that are in a gram of each of these macronutrients. So they sometimes, you hear these called macros. These are macronutrients. So this is the majority of what you eat. You've heard of micronutrients. Those would be vitamins and minerals because you eat very small amounts of them. Here are the macronutrients. This is the main part of what we eat, carbs, fats, and protein. Protein, a gram of protein has 4 kilocalories. And that K is cal. It's a kilocalorie. A calorie is the amount of heat that is burned in order to raise 1 cubic centimeter of water 1 degree Celsius. Okay. Well, that's not much energy. So we actually did, when you see calories on a box of food, they're really talking about thousands of little calories. So calories on your box, they're actually called kilocalories. So I'll just keep using K-cal. I use the word K because it is technically a kilocalorie that we are measuring. Little fun fact. There you are. So you didn't know you were going to get a lesson on the metric system here when you're standing here. However, fat, bad fat. No, fat's not bad, but it does have a lot of calories in it. So 1 gram of fat has 9 calories in it. So carbs and protein, 4, and fat has 9. So here's the protocol that I was following. A lot of times if you look up and they say, how much protein should you eat? A lot of sites will say you should eat approximately 0.36 grams of protein per pound of body weight to give you an idea. I think that's too low. The protocol I followed was much higher. Okay. So I was following a protocol of shooting for 1 gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight. So what's my target? That's what I was going to go for. It's more protein than oftentimes is recommended by other resources, but other resources might just be talking about the minimum. You know. Sometimes you hear recommended daily minimum, recommended daily allowances, the RDA, and they say, well, oftentimes that's a minimum. I mean, you need to at least get this just for basic health. There's no harm in eating more protein because protein actually serves a lot of very important things. It helps to build muscle, or at least if you're seeking to lose weight, to maintain muscle, and that's important. If you're not maintaining muscle, you're going to be burning up muscle and fat. And I think it's good if you can to maintain muscle. Protein actually helps you feel more satiated. So those calories are more filling. It also has the thiothermic effect, which means the body has to expend a certain amount of energy to break down the protein. It actually is going to expend more energy than it will on other types of foods to break it down and digest it. So protein has lots of advantages. So I think it's a positive thing to pick a high protein goal, and that's what I did. What about fat levels? Just a recommendation, it's good that about 30% of the calories that you have should come from fat. And why? Because fats are necessary for the body. It's important to sustain your immune system, for cellular repair, for maintaining certain vitamins. Certain vitamins are fat-soluble vitamins, and it's in fact important to have fat in order to maintain those vitamins, to digest them and to move them around your body. So then there are lots of things. This is just stuff I've learned, and there are other people who know much more about these things. So I am not the expert in all these things, but what I've learned, fat's important. Okay, so don't eat it. So no fat diet. No, not good. Not good, because your body needs some of that. You need it for your brain, yeah? So for brain function and all of that. So fats are not bad. Carb, how many carbs should you have? So the carbs would make up what's left. Once you set proteins and fats, then the carbs then fill in the rest. And carbs have great advantages as a primary source of energy. So it's where we get the easy energy that we need for training. For the strength we need throughout the day, for recovery, for important recovery. We need that when the body's rebuilding during periods of recovery, rest, or sleep. Healthy carbs, if you pick healthy carbs, they can give you a lot of volume of food and help, therefore, with feeling satiated. So feeling satiated is a great way to deal with hunger. And of course, again, if they're healthy carbs, they're also an excellent source of vitamins, minerals, nutrients. So carbs are good too. So carbs are the enemy. Keto. No. I did not follow a keto thing or any of that. So I was having carbs and fats and protein, all in what I think are reasonable and healthy combinations. So calculating this would kind of give you a picture of what I've done over the last several months. So here's the example of just applying this system. And I'll just run through this quickly, and if you want, you can go back to the slides later if you want to then apply the numbers yourself. So I was shooting for an intake of right around 2,000 calories per day. That would have been approximately 700 calories of a deficit, a daily deficit of about 700 calories. My target, if I was shooting for 180 pounds, okay, I actually got below that. Okay. Oop, I haven't given you the number yet. Okay. So I was shooting for 180, so 180 grams of protein. So that was the plan. 180 grams of protein turns out to be 720 calories of my diet. So using just the simple math that's there. I set fat a little under 30%, so at 27%, that would be 540 calories. And how many grams does that turn out? That turns out to be 60 grams of fat. So just following the math here, using the conversion between the number of calories per gram of each of these macronutrients. And what's left once I subtract the 720 and the 540 from the 2,000? Then what's left is another set is 720, then is left is 740, and that turns out to be 185 grams of carbs. If you use MyFitnessPal, you can set up goals and you can say, this is my target. I'm planning to eat 2,000 calories a day. And in fact, you can even then go in and fine tune it and specify, and here's what I would like to eat. I'd like to eat this much protein, this much fat, this much carbs. MyFitnessPal will track it all for you, so which is actually really handy. So that's a handy thing to do. So then exercise, basics of exercise. Okay, and this is no mystery. I mean, it's one of the things that I was doing, I think, over the years was focusing really more on cardio. So it was just like it's all cardio. So if you just work, or you'll just burn it off. Well, I think it's important, and part of the advice, the counsel I received was that it's important to work on strength training, resistance training, as much as cardio. So in fact, maybe even a little bit more so. So cardio is fine. Resistance training, building up muscle. So cardio does not build up muscle, so you're just trying to expend energy. But building up muscle helps to maintain your physical body during weight loss. So some resistance training, I think, is a good thing. So keep that muscle strong. And so doing both is perhaps not a bad thing. So they can work together. So the goal that I was following when trying to lose weight, to lose fat, was to maintain the muscle or even build muscle if possible. So I think that kind of helps to keep more of a healthy thing. So sometimes you see people who just like eat so little, maybe you know some of the other priests in town who just stop eating. I don't know. And if you just stop eating, you're going to lose muscle and fat, and then you look very emaciated, I think. So I think the idea of trying to at least sustain muscle while losing fat was important. It was important to me to follow that type of a goal. Suggestion is not to lose weight too quickly. You cut too quickly, your body is going to find a way to burn that energy, and it will burn fat, but it's gonna find that energy wherever it can, and it will burn up muscle if you cut too quickly, if you lose weight too quickly. So by losing weight in that gradual way, by not doing it too quickly, it is possible to maintain more muscle and focus the burn on fat itself, on losing more fat. One of the things that is helpful then is low intensity, steady state cardio. So you'll see that sometimes this is a common acronym that's used. So that would be like walking. That's most of what I did. So people saw me walking a lot. I walked a lot. So pretty much every day, a couple miles every day, around the track, and away we go. And that was very helpful. So it's just, it takes time, but there's some benefits to that I'll talk about a little bit later. But you can have medium intensity steady state. Some people like that. That will be a little bit more intense activity. Some people might, cycling or other things like that where it's something that you can maintain for a long period of time, but it's going to be higher intensity where the pulse is going to go up. Your heart rate's going to go up. Some people are a big fan of HIIT or high intensity interval training. Those would be short bursts of energy where you're really doing very intense activity very quickly, or anything else that's very, places a high demand on the body, jogging, running, a lot of running. I try to avoid some of those things because all of that stress on the body, it's a lot of intense stress on the body, and I think that actually contributes to some joint disruption or muscle interference. It actually is going to get in the way of building muscle or retaining muscle. So in my experience, I avoided that and just focused on the steady state cardio just to burn up energy that way. So for me, it was mostly walking, but people can choose all sorts of activities that are good for them. So what works for me and what works for you might be different things. The advantages of walking. So since and I can talk about this because this was the one thing I certainly had a lot of experience with. So walking again pretty much every day, oftentimes early in the morning, even when it's cold. So that's when it's a challenge. Daylight savings time is coming up. So that's good. It's going to get a little bit lighter out in the morning. It's very dark in the morning sometimes. You go too early. So health benefits. Contact with nature is great. So just being outside is such a good thing. Getting fresh air. Having exposure to natural light. Sometimes we get cooped up so much and we deal with artificial light. There are a lot of benefits just to having natural light. Exposure to natural light. It's good for vitamin D. Vitamin D is good for COVID, they say. So that's okay. The health benefits also clears the mind and increases focus and perspective. There's nothing quite like getting out and being and physically exerting yourself and moving around to do that. And so sometimes I would also listen to books on tape, so audiobooks. And I found that to be extremely helpful. So I was able to do a tremendous amount of reading through audiobooks. But whether reading books or even if it's listening to music or sometimes not having anything playing, but just to have that time for focus and perspective, that is a valuable thing. Sometimes I think we get so distracted with we're watching news or TV or there's some shows on or things are happening and we're distracted and we're not taking time to really think. Having time to think is underrated. We should have that. That's a good thing. So time to think is a good thing. That's good. Resistance training. So just a few more things. And so I talked about exercise a little bit, but now specifically the idea of weightlifting, resistance training. So just some things that I've learned along the way. And again, I'm far from an expert, so other people are going to be able to advise in terms of how best to do that. But the things that stand out for me is consistency is such an important thing. You know, if someone decides on one occasion that they're going to do, 200 push-ups, and you're going to do that at some point, maybe not in a row. I don't mean in a row. Okay, that's how you know. But and then they said, okay, that's it, and I'm going to get fit. Okay. Well, if they were to do 10 push-ups a day, but then do that consistently for many different days, doing it consistently, doing less but doing it consistently is better than doing like one thing once and then never doing it again. Consistency is such an important thing. So getting with a routine that you stick with, consistent work. Trying to progress in that, the idea of progressive overload, the idea is that you constantly challenge the body by trying to lift a little bit more. So if you lift a certain amount of weight doing a certain exercise, then try to lift a little more. So as you kind of work your way up, so consistently trying to challenge the body. It's not enough if you just simply accept a certain plateau and say, okay, well, that's good enough. The idea of constantly trying to improve means trying to push and to challenge the body, and they call it progressive overload. It's important to have good technique. So there are techniques for different exercises, and a person can hurt themselves if they don't do that. But it's good. The exercise works the best if the technique is good, if you have a good range of motion on the exercise. So sometimes I'll see in the gym, I'll see people and they'll lift the weight and they'll put some immensely heavy weight on and then they'll do these lifts where it's like, 2 inches or something. Well, that's okay. I mean, that's fine, but that's not a full range of motion. So we try, you want to, whatever the motion is, you want to try to make sure that you're getting the full benefit out of the exercise. Not jerking weights around because that's momentum. You're letting the momentum of the weight help you. Now be under control. With weights and all the time. That's all helpful with good technique. So I found that to be very useful. Compound movements are types of exercises that exercise more than one specific muscle at a time. So there are certain movements that will involve more of the body. Those are excellent exercises, and oftentimes it's good for those to be kind of, the first exercises that are performed. Then later there are isolation exercises where you're working on another specific muscle. So the protocol I was following is working first on compound exercises and then isolation exercises, but making sure that you exercise the whole body. So it's sometimes when people are lifting weights, they focus on one body part because they think, okay, they want one body part to look really good. Okay, well, you can do that, but I think it's much more healthy in the long run to just be holistic in that approach, to exercise the whole body. Keeping a log, how will you know if you're actually progressively overloading, if that you're actually making progress? Keeping a log, so how much weight did you lift, how many times, how many sets, reps and weights, It's just kind of basic things. And that's how you know that you're making progress. So I think that's very helpful. And it's also important to have time for rest and recovery. The muscles need time to repair. And it's in that repair that they actually grow stronger. Sometimes they will talk about the way that you stress the muscle. So you're actually causing those bands to break. And then when you rest is when the muscle heals and reforms and then ends up stronger. It's an anti-fragile kind of a thing. I'm reading about some of that right now. And it's an anti-fragile thing where it actually gets stronger the more you stress it. So you challenge the body and it ends up actually getting better. So, and that's a good thing. But it really requires rest for that to happen. Recovery. So things about recovery. So, you know, you think diet and exercise. Well, recovery is so important too. Recovery includes things I mentioned like sleep and stress management. So the sleep part, just I think, so one of the things I started doing, especially not drinking alcohol, so taking alcohol out of the system, I started going to bed earlier. Because what's the point of staying up? Okay, that's the, so why stay up at that point? So it's just, there's nothing good on TV anyway, so it's just, you know, the talking heads on the news channels they're just rehashing the day. It's all been rehashed, so just go to bed. So I was going to bed earlier and getting up earlier. It's good to get 8 hours of sleep. Certainly at least 7 if you're getting less than that. It's going to get in the way of those other things. It's going to work against you because of increased hunger. It's going to make physical performance go down. So sleep is such an important thing. There are lots of great habits for sleep. These are just a couple that stood out for me, but there's really a ton of important strategies that people can use. Making sure you have a dark room, that the room is cool, that promotes, you know, deeper sleep. Avoiding blue light at night, so that you always heard the people talk about the color light. You have to dim your devices and go into night mode, and it's for real, because your body is responding to brighter light thinking it's daytime. So no, get out in the bright light when it's daytime, so your body knows, okay, now it's day, it's time to be up. And when we trick our body by having brighter lights or blue lights at the nighttime, you're giving the body mixed signals. The body thinks it's time to go to bed, but you're seeing bright light, which is telling you to stay up. So really limiting, and that means also limiting computers, tablets, phones, that type of thing. It inhibits the body getting ready for sleep. Avoid stimulating activity before bed. Caffeine gets in the way of all that. So all things that are, none of this is surprising, but techniques to get good sleep. Getting good sleep is so important. But then also stress management. The idea of stress reduction, so we carry stress about within us, and that can get in the way of our physical performance, causes us to eat more. So stress is something that can have a very negative effect. But one of the things about stress, and I'll make a couple book recommendations a little bit later, is stress itself is something that we actually also need. We depend on a certain amount of stress because stress is the thing that actually challenges us. So there is such a thing as healthy stress. In other words, you apply a certain amount of pressure, and if you can rise to the challenge, then you actually can excel. So if we're never stressed, which is another way of saying that we're never challenged, well, then we don't grow. So we actually need to be confronted with a certain amount of stress in our lives if we, in fact, intend to grow and become something better. And so the idea of redefining our approach to that, so thinking, oh, stress is bad. Well, not all stress is bad. So thinking differently about stress can change our mindset. Again, now I'm back to that mindset idea. But then stress occurs, and this is just another good insight, is that it occurs because we care about something. So if you didn't care about something, you wouldn't be stressed about it. So the only reason why you're stressed about a thing is because you actually care about it. It's important to you. There's another, just reframing that idea, thinking a little bit differently about whatever the thing is that causes stress. So how to manage stress better? So sometimes I think it's we let it get the better of us when we get emotional about it. So try not to get emotional. Stay grounded. So stay grounded in good principles. Look for solutions. If you focus on solutions and not fretting about the problem, if you know something's wrong and all you want to do is complain about the fact that it's wrong, then the stress is going to just multiply and get worse. Focus on the solution. How can you make the problem go away? And then that is actually a productive thing. Another suggestion, detach from electronics. You want to see a big cause of stress? Social media. Oh, my goodness. My suggestion, you do what you want. You're all free to do exactly as you wish. My suggestion, detach from social media, and I'll tell you, if news is causing you stress, you now have permission, okay, You know, okay, you're all absolved from watching the news if you want. If it's going to just stress you out, just turn it off for a while. Honest to God, I mean, the world will go on, okay? And when you turn the news back on, when you decide to go back to it, the world's going to have just as many problems as it had when you turned the news off. So if you don't know. So feel free to detach a little bit. If it's driving you crazy, just turn it off. You'll be happier, actually. So little things like that. One of the things, this is in one of the books I'll recommend in a bit, is if you can identify what your core values are, that can actually help you maintain a healthy perspective in confronting stress. So, for example, in my case, that notion of recognizing I needed to change, so I said, okay, it's important to be humble about accepting that I needed to make change, vulnerable about being ready to ask for the help that I needed, to be consistent about making a decision, so, and to be consistent in sticking through with that commitment, to face things with courage. So those are just a couple ideas that occurred to me. So you think about core values. So then you say, okay, well, then how am I going to confront this situation? If we keep your core values in front of you, then that oftentimes helps us to maintain that grounded attitude, to keep a good and healthy perspective, and then we manage stress even better than that. So I'll say a little bit more about where I came across that when I get to book recommendations, if you'd like to delve more into that. So I did it, because of the presentation, I can't take more time to go into every detail, but I'll give you the reference later. So now round two, okay, going deep dive, okay, let's now talk about food. Okay, we've done the basics, okay, we've talked about the basic things, but now how to manage a healthy, balanced diet better. Okay, my suggestion, here's what I follow, stick to unprocessed foods, okay, stick with the healthier foods. Processed foods, the more food is processed, so they take the natural food and then they do stuff to it and they put chemicals in it and they do this and they do that and they put all this stuff together, and out comes this packaged product. We have a lot of packaged products, a lot of prepared or processed foods in our life. When foods are processed, they tend to go up in fats and carbs. The processing tends to deprive them of more protein, or there tends to not be as much protein as there would be otherwise in the unprocessed food. It also oftentimes loses some of its vitamins and nutrients. Oh, but we can supplement that because we'll put in a supplement. Well, that'll fix it. Oh, okay. So, well, processed foods, my suggestion, probably not as good for us. So stick to the unprocessed foods when you have a choice between them. So just natural foods closer to their natural state oftentimes are healthier for us. There's a shortcut for that sometimes you'll hear recommended. They say shop the perimeter of the grocery store. That's where you're going to find most of the natural foods. Where are you going to find the processed foods? In the interior of the grocery store. As you make your way up and down the shelves, you're going to find the more processed foods. You're going to find the more natural foods around the perimeter. Not always, but I mean, that's just a shorthand. So I noticed when the lockdowns all started and you went to the grocery store, so if you went and you were looking for toilet paper, you were completely out of luck. So you weren't going to find that at all. But then as you went through, then lots of the processed foods, the shelves were bare. Boy, they were going after this and this and this and this. You know what there was plenty of? Fresh fruit and vegetables. Nobody wanted the fresh fruits and vegetables. So there was never a shortage of the fresh fruits and vegetables.
Lettuce.
Yeah, well, lettuce maybe, yeah. So anyway, but that's, so stick with the natural stuff. That was, and that was very helpful for me in the midst of the, especially the beginning of the lockdowns. The priorities that I followed, so here's my recommendation. So if you'd like the protocol that I was using. First and foremost, you have a calorie goal, stick to the goal, okay? You have a certain number of calories you can eat. Okay, it's like a budget. You can spend your calories on this food or that food. Spend wisely. Stick to the calorie goal. Beyond that, okay, in addition to that, if you can then on top of that make the protein goal, I always shop for the protein goal as well. If you're eating a few more carbs and a few less fats or a few more fats and a few less carbs, no big deal. Don't worry about having to get all of that consistent. But shoot for the protein goal. Calories first. Then protein. And then finally, just a good focus on vegetables and fruit is good. That's just another thing that's going to keep a variety in the diet, as well as healthy nutrients and things like that. So just to keep it simple, you'd say, like, if there were three priorities, then whatever was happening in a day, first and foremost, try to stick to the calories, and then this, and then that. So just they are kind of a priority of a number one, a number two, and a number three. And you can fine-tune after that, but those were kind of the three principal things that I was striving for. Okay, unprocessed food. Okay, let's compare. Okay, I now present you two meals. And here's the guessing game. You now get to guess. Okay, So you have, on one hand, a quarter pounder with large fries and a Diet Coke. Oh, the Diet Coke makes it all better, right? So, see, it's healthy now. See, no calories in Diet Coke. Okay. So the on the other hand, you have, and this is an actual meal. Okay, this is an actual thing I put together. So this is a very large bowl of salad. There's lettuce underneath that. But then on top of that, on top of the lettuce is celery. So chopped up celery, chopped up carrots, cucumber, onion, tomato. Then also with balsamic vinegar, but no olive oil. Okay, just balsamic vinegar. An apple, and then 60 ounces of chicken breast, just baked chicken breast. Okay. Compare the two. Can you take a guess? Calories in the McDonald's number two large meal, as you can call it. 1,000 calories. That is correct. There's 1,000 calories in the quarter pounder meal, the large quarter pounder meal. Calories in the salad, the apple, and the chicken? Can I take a guess? 300. 300 is actually right. It is 300 calories. So, you know which one is more food by volume? Do you know how much food, by volume, how much food it is? This has gone, you can eat a quarter pounder in four bites if your mouth is really big. Well, no. No, but this has gone fast. This is a lot of food, just by volume. Okay. Now, lots of these things are, this here is just about 100 calories. Just the salad. It's amazing. It's amazing the difference. Carbs, the carbs in fast food, in that fast food meal, 108 carbs. Okay. Whereas the salad, a lot of the carbs are going to be in the apple there. So only 43 grams of carbs in the meal on the right. Okay, here comes the big one. Protein. Should be a lot of protein in this, right? Well, it's 1,000 calories. I mean, there better be some protein in that. 37 grams of protein. Okay. Now, there's not that many calories, so it's not going to be the same. It is 26 grams of protein. So this is not the highest protein meal that you could imagine. I mean, there are ways to get more protein. But here's the big one, fats. How much fat is in this meal on the left? And it's not fried chicken, it's baked. Okay. The amount of fat in that meal on the, and there's no olive oil, it's just balsamic vinegar. Okay. Just 2 grams of fat in that meal on the right. Whereas on the other hand, the McDonald's meal, it's going to be high, isn't it? Okay. Survey says 49 grams of fat. So that's the difference between those two meals. What a difference that is. And in terms of which one would you rather eat? I mean, especially once you kind of know and you see what the differences are between these different things. So just a comparison, and this is something that I actually made, and it's just interesting to do that type of comparison. So I can have three of these, and I can still have less than this, if you can imagine that. Right. Yeah, if we were to then do the breakdown of vitamins and things like that, whereas a lot of these natural foods are going to have, so it's freshly chopped up, you know, vegetables and fruits, so which is great. Here are some different high protein sources. This is just kind of from the list that these would be types of things I would go to. So if you're going to spend 100 calories, okay, so the idea is that 100 calories of a particular item, how much protein do you get out of 100 calories? So it's not per serving, so a serving could be a different size. But right on top of that, shrimp is incredible in terms of protein. Egg whites, protein powder, so that's a lot of times that's very helpful. You see a lot of people, especially when working out or resistance training or whatnot, they get their protein shake in and things like that. So protein powder is great. Chicken, tilapia, salmon, cod, of course, not fried. Okay, so they're not fried food, but baked or grilled, so just to keep that healthy. So your meats, your fish, yogurt, cottage cheese, other things, especially certain vegetables in particular, have a tremendous amount of protein in it, including, if you don't do flour tortillas, you can do seaweed wrap. Well, that's not seaweed wrap. It's spinach, the spinach-based tortilla wrap. So some of these have a tremendous amount of protein in them. So eggs are, now egg whites are where all the protein is. Eggs themselves, it's because there's also a lot of other things. There's a lot of other things, including natural fats, actually, in eggs as well. So eggs are good. Egg whites are even better. So just a helpful thing. If you're looking to eat a lot of protein, these are just some good sources to go to. Some tips. These are just some of the things that I followed. Some of these things I did not do immediately when I started. They were all things that I got better at as time went on. So the idea of eating low calorie density food, so food that has a lot of volume but not a lot of calories, that makes you feel fuller. Salads are great. Watch out for the dressing. So you don't have the olive oil. I don't miss that too much. So watch out. Olive oil and butter are dangerous there. Empty calories and liquid calories, so they don't really fill you up. So even things like alcohol in particular, but soda, juices, anything that's going to give you calories but not give you a sense of fullness, better to do without some of those things. You'll be happier in the end, especially if you're trying to watch those calories. Avoid hyper-processed foods, fast food. The halo effect. The halo effect is a principle that people identify in diet circles, where they say you see something in the store and it says, oh, this is high in protein, or oh, buy this, high in fiber, or something like that. And you see that, and it may be, but that's not the whole story. I mean, if you actually look at all the numbers on the item, you might realize it might not be as healthy as you think it is. It might have one healthy characteristic. And they say if you put it in a green package and if you stamp organic on it, then you're more likely. I say, oh, see, I'm eating healthy. Okay. Well, maybe you are and maybe you aren't, but just beware of that. Just because it looks healthy, it might not be, so we have to be careful about that. When eating out, but one thing to do is study the menu in advance, so that way you make a plan. So I have kind of a goal of trying to eat a certain amount of food, trying to stay within certain calories, get certain protein. So study the menu, make a plan. There, you can make good choices and bad choices. If you plan ahead when going out, you can actually find ways to eat better food that's going to stick with the program, and you can still eat out and do things like that. So, and I worked at doing that. Some strategies for hunger. These are just because one of the things that would happen, hunger would come and go. And so as I was dealing with hunger, these are just different things. Protein helps you feel fuller. Vegetables are great. Don't waste food on liquid calories. Intermittent fasting is a way of trying not to eat so much at certain times of the day and focus your eating window on a certain time. That's a technique. Some people find that helpful. Avoiding snacking, getting good sleep, keeping the diet simple, choosing bland food. Simple, bland food tends to not promote overeating. If you're dealing with lots of rich foods, you'll be hungrier and want to eat more. Drinking water is great. Water helps just to kind of give you a little sense of some temporary fullness. The simple unprocessed healthy sources will be better for hunger. Having a variety of fruits and vegetables is great, so there, get your variety there. Hiding unhealthy foods. If you've got unhealthy foods sitting out on the counter in your kitchen, you know what you're going to do? You're going to eat them. So that's right. But if you can get those things away from you, so if you can get the unhealthy options further away from you, you're less likely to eat them. So that's actually a really helpful thing. So avoid comfort eating or that craving. If we can interrupt that craving says, oh, I have to eat something right now. If we can interrupt that, that's helpful. Sometimes you might feel hungry, and it's just for a moment. And that's if you can get past the hunger itself. And then don't keep eating and eating and eating until you're uncomfortably full. If we learn to eat and not be completely stuffed, that's actually helpful. So just some quick things there. Unexpected things that happened along the way, things that I was not expecting. So I didn't set out on a goal from the first month. I was starting to try to control blood pressure. But things I learned along the way is weight loss itself is not linear. So you might lose a lot and then plateau. So it's gonna constantly change. The water weight is it goes up and down. So you'd be surprised that you say, I'm working so hard at this, and why am I not losing weight? And then suddenly you can lose a lot of weight in a very short amount of time. It is not a linear process. And that's why it requires consistency, to just stick with it and to just trust that, yes, this will work out. That's a helpful thing. Hunger, I had times where I would lose weight. I was getting down to 190. I was famished. It was horrible. Then I got down to 180, and I was fine. And I wasn't hungry. So hunger comes and goes. It comes in waves. The body says, we need more food. And then later on, it adapts, and then you feel fine, and it doesn't. So hunger is one of those things that can psych people out, but it does come and it does go. The silver lining during the shutdown, I actually had so much control over what I was eating, because I was basically preparing all of my own foods. That was an unexpected benefit, that as I was getting into this, I was much more in control of everything that I was consuming and much more aware of what was going into it. My suggestion, there are some very high-calorie options. If you can learn to live without some of those, or at least to diminish them or cut them down, if you can cut down or cut out oil, a tablespoon of olive oil, 120 grams, a tablespoon of butter, 120 calories, 100 calories. Sugar, cream, you know, if you don't need those for your coffee, if you're cutting out calories and soda, any of those things, there are some really high-calorie things where just a little adjustment there by taking out some of these most high-calorie things makes a huge difference. Enjoyed more types of fresh fruits and vegetables, and also new ways to prepare them. I was not always big on buying and cooking and preparing fresh vegetables, and have gotten more and more into that. Father Stark will tell you that there's, oh my, do we have lots of fresh vegetables around, so we're always doing something with fresh vegetables. Another surprise, feeling lighter, that's great. Who doesn't want to feel lighter? And feel colder. I feel colder. There's something about having more body fat where you feel warmer. And I feel colder after losing weight. That was another unexpected learning along the way. So beware. So invest in sweaters when you're ready.
I understand when they say that when women are pregnant, they're 5 degrees hotter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, no, your sense of your body temperature is going to change. So, enduring motivation. This is an important characteristic I think about motivation. So, what is the strength of the motivation? Let me give you some different levels. So sometimes you can say, like, okay, I know I need to make a change. So you get a flash in the pan idea. So a momentary inspiration. What's that good for? That'll get you started. Okay, that's enough to decide, okay, I'm going to do one thing different and whatnot. But will it last? Probably not. Not if that's all it is. Not if it's just a flash in the pan. But if it becomes a more stable purpose, this is more long term. So what's the reason for changing? Is it something quick and that isn't really going to stick with you? Or is it more enduring? If it's a more enduring purpose, then it will help you be more consistent about making that change. And if beyond just simply having a reason, if you can practice discipline and exercise willpower, that's an even better way to stay consistent on the path. Because even this inspiration will go away. And even our sense of purpose at times, there'll be times we don't feel like it. And so there are moments where when we don't quite feel as dedicated, when we need just that willpower or that discipline, that's an important characteristic. But even better than that is to build a habit. Once you build a habit, then it becomes a routine. So the routine that gets you up at a certain time in the morning and walking at a certain time and then exercising at a certain time and with a routine of eating certain foods, habits actually really supplement, because even discipline and willpower will give out at a certain point. And then finally, if something actually becomes your passion, you can redefine your identity. You can think of yourself as a different person. If you have a different sense of who you are, then that means that you've actually changed your way of thinking. And then that means that you've now arrived at a new vision of yourself. So motivation, it needs to be able to withstand the different fluctuations and setbacks, because there will be setbacks. And the motivation has got to be stronger than the setbacks and the resistance you encounter. There's resistance along the way, and the motive has got to be something that's strong enough to keep a person going, or they're going to give up. Sometimes we trick ourselves. We say, well, I want all or nothing, and, well, I can't do this, so I'm just going to quit. Okay, well, if you're all or nothing, then you're just going to quit, because some days it's not going to work out. But so to avoid that thinking, to be consistent, to stick with it, that's an important thing. So just good things about motivation. And you can read through this, the presentation, when I link to it. And these are just some of the books that I've been reading, some great things, some things on Stoicism, Marcus Aurelius, and some other books about Stoicism. Also some things about how the brain approaches food, The Hungry Brain. That's a fascinating book. So really, you want to talk about the way the brain tricks you into saying you need this food or that food. A couple other things. So I mentioned some things about stress, the idea of finding good ways to cope with stress. These are some really great books on that. In particular, the one with Kelly McGonigal about finding positives in stress, the upside of stress, was really great. These are some fantastic books about really reframing the way we think about stress. Also, Psycho-Cybernetics is a great one about being able to do more than we think we can, focusing on the essentials, the idea of an alter ego, giving us a sense of inspiration. Stephen Covey on Seven Habits. These are great books, fantastic books. And even if here are some few other strange ones as well. This is the strangest collection you're going to see together on one slide. So even the idea of kind of peace and contemplation. So there are fantastic insights about really being in the moment and dealing with things here. Thich Nhat Hanh. If you've never read Viktor Frankl recounts his being imprisoned in a concentration camp and how he got through that and what that experience was. It's a fascinating story, fantastic story. 1984 is a work of dystopian fiction. It's a fascinating book. And to give a religious thing, and there's plenty of other things as well. The autobiography of Fulton Sheen, I think, is great as well. So if you haven't read that, read what you want. Sometimes people say, well, what have you been reading? Do you have recommendations? Okay, yep, I've got recommendations. So for me, I started off the beginning of the year deciding to remove alcohol and to help control weight, to help control blood pressure. One change that led to other things. So then I started losing weight, having less alcohol. I said, oh, well, this is good. I can actually then eat a better diet because that's going to help me even lose more weight, which I did. And you know what? Might as well be more fit. So let's focus on fitness and exercise more. And all of this led to going to bed earlier. And what did that mean? It meant less snacking at night, less TV, less internet, getting up earlier, and then in time in the morning. So that left for more time for prayer, for contemplation, focusing on exercise. I did a lot more walking, did a lot more reading. A lot of that was reading by listening to audiobooks. All of that has led to overall better focus, better health, better sleep, more energy, and increased happiness. Okay, I didn't necessarily intend, in January when I started here, I didn't necessarily intend that I was going to end up here, but that's what happened over time. So it was funny how one thing ended up leading to the next thing, and really taking it all together, that it really was a package deal. So I had started in 2019. There was a point at which I said, I really should do something about this. And so I said, no, I'll drink a little less, and I'll do a little more, and I'll watch the diet a little better. And I was doing halfway commitments. You know what? Halfway commitments don't work. So, or I'll just work on this one area. For me, at least in my experience, really working on the physical health of the body, also stimulating the mind, and in a spiritual life, dedicating the soul and having that committed strength. You have the great commandment, says love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. It says for me, it had to be something that the reason why this has worked better for me is that it was a complete investment. So I said, no, let's not do anything halfway. Let's not just say, well, let's tinker around the margins. No, it was something that was a complete commitment. And then kind of using that, some of those stoic insights of finding joy in a disciplined life, that it's actually happier, it's actually better for us to be, to rein in our use of even material goods and to be less concerned about physical objects, the physical things that we have, our possessions. To be more focused on the things that are most important. Put first things first and find joy in a disciplined life. And of course, how is it that we can do that? The only way we can find time for the things that are really most important is we have to take time away from something else. So how many times do we find ourselves wasting time? What are the time wasters in life? And by cutting time away out of that, just as an example, you know, binging on a lot of television, what does that get us? I mean, so if we were to take a little time away from that and dedicate that time instead to reading some good literature, what a difference that would make. If you follow Stephen Covey, he talks about this as quadrant four activities. He talks about time wasters as things that are not important and not urgent. And he says you need to spend that time then on the things that are important, even if they're not urgent, but the things that are truly important. Taking time away from the time wasters and using it on the things that are most critical. One of the things about the brain, this is another kind of unexpected learning, is that the brain works on autopilot a lot. You know, when you tie your shoe, you don't have to think about how to tie your shoe. You just tie your shoe. And so often, the brain does so many things for us on autopilot without even asking us first. Okay, you're hungry, so suddenly there's food in your hand. Okay, but you don't even have to think about it. If you can just stumble into the kitchen without a conscious thought and find things in order to satisfy hunger. But we can use our conscious brain to help give direction to that unconscious part of our brain that is kind of on autopilot a lot. This is one of the key insights in psychocybernetics, which is really a great insight. Or St. Paul would put it this way. St. Paul would say, why is it that sometimes I do the things that I don't want to do, and I do the thing, for I do not do what I want to do, but I sometimes do the things I do not want to do. And don't we feel that war within ourselves at times? Well, at times it means disciplining the part of ourself that lacks discipline or that wants to do what it wishes. And we can choose to discipline it. We can consciously make choices to give better direction to that kind of autopilot part of our brain. That was a fascinating thing. There's really a lot more to this insight, but it's just a teaser there. So the other thing I've learned along the way is, and really to a greater extent than maybe I ever realized, that we have a greater capacity to change than we might believe. That we can lift more than we can expect. So when physical exercise, we can surprise ourselves. Restricting what we eat, we can embrace more sacrifices than we assume. And in fact, when thinking about how we live our life, we can be better than we can imagine. We can be more than we can imagine. So to recognize that we have greater capacity than we might imagine. Oftentimes, I think we limit ourselves. And we settle for less because we assume that's the best we can do. And don't assume that that's the limit. So that was an important lesson along the way. Either choose to make peace with the status quo and say, it's never going to get any better, so that's where I am. Or decide to change the status quo. Dave Ramsey might say that you have to decide someday that you woke up and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. And then I'm not going to settle for the status quo anymore. And then finally, one of the things with the saints that I think is also a great lesson, the saints lived lives of heroic virtue. What does that tell us? It reminds us that it can be hard, but it's possible. It's possible to live not only physically, intellectually, emotionally, but even spiritually, to live a life of great holiness. It's challenging, but it's possible. And the saints tell us that that's true. For all things are possible for God, to use the line from the Archangel Gabriel. So where did I start at? 233 pounds. Okay. Then when I got to March, I was down to 210. Okay. And this is actually from Holy Week right there. And then here we are today, and 170. So I shot for 180 and got to 175 and then got down to 170. So so I have come a long way, baby. Virginia Slims. There is a
so that's it.
Yeah. Well, you have to be careful. I know, because at some point the clothes don't fit anymore. Yeah, the vestments, fortunately, not so bad. So, yeah. So, very good. So, thank you very much. So, questions or comments that you have? Or
are you just going to maintain now?
Then the plan is to maintain, yeah. So, no, I'm happy with that goal. So, the idea is to now maintain. And maintaining is important, too, because it means reaching the goal. But that doesn't mean that job's done, now celebrate. Okay, now sky's the limit. No. It means now sticking with it. And so, I'm now kind of in a period of adjusting the calories up to what is a maintenance level for me. So that's the current target. So yeah, question?
How did you get the 2,000 calorie
deficit figured out? Yeah. So how did I get the 2,000 calorie target with a 700 calorie deficit? So part of it is that in getting some help with a fitness coach, so after kind of, and some of it is just a ballpark guess to start with. So that was the target I was given. So I was, so I kind of got some help and advice with that target. Now, I didn't know at the time that was going to be a 700 calorie deficit. I kind of found that out based on how quickly I was losing weight. So, but you could use some calculators and you can plug in your numbers and, and by plugging in some of those numbers, it could say, well, yeah, you're burning approximately 2,700 calories. But when I went back to one of those that recommended TDEE calculator that you saw, it'll just give you an idea. And then that's where, as you track weight and track calories, if you decide to do this the way that I did, which is up to you how you want to do that. But if you want to do that, then you can actually kind of figure out where it really is. Because when you see in reality how much weight you lose, then you'll find out, okay, oh, I was in more of a deficit than I thought, or I realized I wasn't in as much of a deficit as I thought. So, so experience kind of answers the question for you. Yeah. Okay. Other questions or comments? Okay. Very good. I went over a little over an hour, so, but I appreciate your kind attention. So, very good. So, thank you very much, and so it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks.